Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, our very special guest is Emily Moyer. Emily Moyer is with Off Planet Radio. We'll provide all of her website information or bio information on our website, as well as our dedicated YouTube channel. Emily Moyer is well known in the field, a colleague and close associate of Randy Moggins, who I had on the show in the recent past. Emily has a lot of information to share, so without any further ado, Emily Moyer, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Thank you very much for having me, James. I really appreciate it. It's great to be here.
The pleasure is all ours. Emily, for the benefit of our listeners, tell us a bit about your background and how you wound up in this field.
It's so strange. This isn't a field people like grow up. They're like, oh, when I grew up, I want to do this. You know what I mean?
We
just kind of end up here by strange circumstance. But I was, probably how I ended up here started before I was even born. But as for my recollection, I was born here in Los Angeles, California, and in many respects, like normal kid. If growing up in Los Angeles is normal at all, you know. I started in the entertainment business before I was two, which I still have not completely figured out why that is, but I guess it was suggested to my family that I would be good for that. And so I began doing that before the age of two. And then also at the age of two, I began doing gymnastics. And those two things really, the acting stuff, I was never really that into. The gymnastics was a love affair from the beginning. But interestingly enough, both of those things, you know, ultimately ended up being funnels or vectors for sort of different kind of experiences to come into my life than for the average person. And, obviously we know, like with Hollywood, kind of some of the stuff going on there. And we can get into that a little more. I don't know what kind of parts of that you're interested, but we can get into some of that. People know what goes on with Hollywood, and probably in recent weeks, people have been learning about what goes on with gymnastics. And gymnastics is an interesting sport. It's wonderful and I love it, but there's also a dark side to gymnastics that involves a lot of physical, emotional, psychological, and now as people are now starting to understand, sexual abuse. And so these were the kinds of experiences that sort of shaped me and formed me. And I was really dedicated to gymnastics through most of my early life till I was about 20. And then I started kind of, you know, moving into another phase of my life where I was really interested in dance music and the underground party scene. At that time, it was raves. I'm still involved in the underground dance music scene, warehouse party kinds of things. I really like techno music and house music, and have been involved in all aspects of that kind of scene. And again, it's also something that can be a lot of fun and pleasurable, enjoyable, but there's a dark side of that as well. And so kind of through my own series of events that really started happening in about 2005, I really had like a further kind of waking up. I was always one of those people who was like, you know, when you know that question, like, when does someone wake up? I was always like a little bit awake, because I was always that person that thought there's what you think is going on, and then there's what's really going on, and they're not the same thing. So I've always had that perspective. But starting in about 2005, maybe a little before that, kind of a little bit after 9/11, but in 2005, just a series of events started to really unlock things for myself, and I became very completely taken with alternative information and conspiracy and some of the health things and whatever. And about that time, I stumbled upon information about MKUltra, and that's the one that really grabbed onto me and never let go for a number of reasons. And in the beginning, I just could, it was everything I was hearing about it had a familiarity to it, but I was not, you don't ever think when you're starting to look at this that it's familiar to you because it's about you. You know what I mean? But that was the one I just couldn't let go. And as I began to dive deeper and deeper into some of the really gritty parts of the research, I started to recognize that I was becoming sort of the central character in the whole story for myself in a way that was actually quite terrifying, in that I was really in denial of for a long time. And through this process, I've had to sort of turn over a bunch of stones and uncover dark sides of all of the things that I've loved in my life. And for me, knowing the truth is really important, but also finding a way to retain the joy, because all of these things don't have to be awful and torturesome. There's a reason that they use them, because if there wasn't something human for us to connect to in them, it wouldn't work. For me, the whole thing is about, you know, going deep and dealing with the hardcore reality of stuff, but also reclaiming these things as our own, so we can, you know, have the joy that we once had with them, and really, you know, we need to use these same things that have sort of harmed us as a society. We need to turn them around and use them to heal ourselves, because they can be, you know, all of these, you know, it's just like anything, like with all these like healing technologies that come out now, they come out because they've been weaponized against us and used, and now everybody knows about them. So now they're healing. So we need to kind of do that with society too, with the whole way we've been socially engineered. A lot of the same techniques that have been used to harm us can be reversed and used for the, you know, opposite reason.
Absolutely. It doesn't have to be like a grind and a wailing of gnashing of teeth. It's, we're on this voyage of discovery about ourselves and the wider world around us. And, you know, we're doing them a favor if we just keep ourselves in a low vibratory ebb. Yep. Now, what's interesting, Emily, is sometimes how spirit, destiny, call it what one will, kind of puts us in places, even in spite of ourselves, where we can see different aspects of how this control matrix works. You talked about the gymnastics, and now it's topical because we hear about that. I think he was a medical doctor attached to, a women's gymnastics team, I think it was, and who turned out to be a perp, right? Could you give us your insight, having been in the gymnastics scene? And what's interesting also is it always bothered me that, you know, they would make such strident demands on such a young girl. You know, like for the Olympics and everything else, to just apply all this emotional and physical duress. Did you want to comment on that?
Sure. We can talk about it a little bit here. Also, I did a 2-hour fully in-depth interview about gymnastics with Robert Phoenix recently. So people can find that either on our YouTube channel on Off Planet Media or on Robert Phoenix's YouTube channel. And I went really deep into all of the aspects of this case. But I will say this. I'll say that, you know, gymnastics is a really interesting sport because it combines athleticism and beauty and artistry. So it attracts people who have the capacity for both. A lot of other, you know, endeavors that kids do as a child, they're either all about athleticism or all about creativity and arts, and gymnastics is kind of a unique combination of those two things, and it's very aesthetic. But it's also, people have maybe they do, I don't know how much appreciation they have for how hard gymnastics is and how strong you have to be and how flexible you have to be. And the training itself is like military for children. If it's just recreational, no. But if you're identified at a young age like I was, that you had potential, then it's kind of like boot camp, you know, for children in a lot of ways. And, you know, so there can be some positive aspects of that, and that a child learns focus and discipline and those kinds of things young, but it's carried in many, many cases, probably in more cases than not, to an extreme that becomes abusive, physically and certainly psychologically and emotionally. And you know, so that's just, if you know, even in some of your best case scenarios where a kid has a successful career, and you know, didn't end up getting sexually abused, which I'll get to in a minute, they've still, almost by the nature of the sport, experienced on some level some type of physical or emotional or psychological abuse, partly just because a lot of these coaches, even if they're well-intended, they don't necessarily have the tools, the human relation tools, to be able to, motivate, discipline, teach the focus to a kid in a proper, healthy way. So they rely on their human nature, which is, you know, to get angry, to threaten, to belittle, to use these psychological kinds of games and tricks to try and elicit better performance out of children. And it doesn't always work, but oftentimes it does. But it does by instilling fear, which is a temporary solution to a problem, but isn't generally the best solution in the long run. You know, so there's that issue. And then, you know, you just can't get around the fact that, like, because gymnasts are half naked all the time, they're in leotards, that it's going to attract certain personality types that are not savory. And, you know, so it's obviously huge right now, this case with Dr. Larry Nassar, who was the team doctor for USA Gymnastics, as well as being an honorary professor and doctor at Michigan State University for all of their athletic programs. And he was also associated with a gym in Minnesota called, in Michigan called Twisters. And, you know, so for the past 20 to 30 years, he's been, you know, sexually abusing girls under the guise of giving them medical treatment for back, hamstring and pelvic injuries. But, you know, I'm most concerned that the media, and even obviously, you know, many in the gymnastics community would like to sweep this under the rug, particularly those who are in the administrative and bureaucratic parts of it, but also a lot of other, you know, coaches, because this is not an isolated problem. I'm really concerned with some of the things I see in the media, because they're trying to clump this in with the Me Too movement. And they're also, it seems very, very focused. It's been a little bit better lately, partly because I actually have a little faith that some of these girls and some of their families and some of the coaches that are on the right side of things are actually not going to let this, they might fall for some of the tricks at first and be manipulated here and there, but I don't think they're going to let this go. But we're going to watch the media try, because I think this is actually in a lot of ways a perfect case for the media to sort of test run how they might deal with it when the political pedophilia scandals cannot be held back anymore. But this is a rampant problem. I've been involved with gymnastics since I was 2, and I coached into my mid-20s. I'm no longer involved with gymnastics that way, but I go to a lot of UCLA gymnastics meets. I watch it on TV. I keep up with it on the internet. There's one in every gym. You know what I mean? When I say that, I don't mean like someone as depraved as Larry Nassar. But in every gym that I've ever trained in or coached in or competed at, there's like that one weird creepy guy. And sometimes like I said on Robert's show, sometimes there's creepy females as well. But I've been aware of this on an intuitive level since I was a child. You don't have the language for it then, but it is beyond me how, if I as a child could intuit that, how adults haven't been able to intuit that. Or if they have been able to, why are they overlooking it? And I think in a lot of cases, especially with parents and sometimes with other coaches or lower level coaches, it's because that they might be a little bit naive, or they don't want to think that, or they're trying to do what's best for their kid, and this person seems like the answer to that. But at the upper levels, and certainly within like the more administrative aspect of things, I think that this has been known for a long time and permitted to go on for a variety of reasons. Sometimes overlooking something, because the U.S. gymnastics team has been massively successful for the last 20 years. They've won truckloads of medals, and the system is making more money than it ever did and getting a lot of attention. So that just even that kind of energy you can get swept up in. But it's my opinion, and this is my opinion, that there are other things going on. There's other kinds of crimes, corruption, and being run through gymnastics, and that people are not. So what I'm talking about generally is I have associated for a long time gymnastics as being involved with MKUltra and Project Talent kinds of programs. And I do think that, we all know the process of mind control has a lot in common with the same kind of grooming for sexual abuse. And in fact, the two are generally go together and are used for the same purpose. And most people I know who've had a mind control experience have also had a sexual abuse experience. And so I do think that it's entirely possible that there are people involved in high levels of the sport of gymnastics that are there is something else going on. I don't think this is known to a lot of people. Like the idea that there could be a mind control program or some kind of creation of a superhuman athlete program or something like that running through a system or a university without the people involved in it even knowing seems odd to most people. But for you and I, for sure, we know that it just takes a few people, you know what I mean, having knowledge of it and being active in this kind of thing for that to happen. And I've wondered possibly if Larry Nassar is also some kind of handler or programmer, or if he is somehow aware that some of that stuff is going on, or if I've even wondered if there's some kind of doping going on that he was aware of. So, you know, if there's other people, you know, the other thing that's happened is it's really called into question the Carolis, who were the head of the,
yes,
right? So the Carolis are well-known in gymnastics. They coach Nadia Comaneci, Mary Lou Retton, Kim Zemeskal, all Carrie Strug, Dominique Mucciano. And for many, many years, they were private coaches, and then they just became basically, Marta Caroli became the team coordinator. So she was selecting the girls for the team and having the training camps at their facilities and stuff like that. And their training methods are very abusive. And they had Larry Nassar there all the time. And, you know, there's a simple answer to, you know, there's a simple answer, which is, well, there's, you know, he was seemed to be helping them with the injuries. The girls seemed to be able to perform well, or, you know, whatever, when with all these years that he's been working with them. But there's also, it's been brought up in the testimonies that part of the reason they liked him was because he would just let the girls compete with their injuries, you know what I mean, which others may not have allowed to have happen. But I also wonder what else was going on. What really was the relationship between him and the Carolis? You know, the Carolis came from Romania, and they have, you know, changed the way USA Gymnastics really functions and turned it more into a similar system that, like, the communist countries used to have. And we know how good those communist countries were at mind control. We know about, you know, kind of separately, but we know about paperclip, right? Like, what? Who's to say that when all those communist countries broke up, there wasn't a similar program instituted for athletics? Think of how many, I mean, in gymnastics especially, I can't tell you the number of Russian or Romanian coaches in this country. And how do we know that they weren't sort of helped along because they had training methods that would bring USA Gymnastics to the forefront? Before the Carolis came along, USA Gymnastics was not really impressive, you know? So these are my thoughts and opinions. And if you look at the Caroli Ranch, it is very similar to some of the bases that we've all described having memories of and, you know, that kind of thing. It's very far away from civilization. Yeah, apparently it's so far away from civilization that there's no cell phone reception there, that if there's an injury, then they have to get a helicopter to come, you know, take people if there was an emergency, and that the closest anything at all is a high security prison. And the Caroli Ranch is very similar to, like, it's almost like a Neverland Ranch kind of place. Like, they have, like, hunting and fishing and man-made lakes there, and they have exotic animals, llamas, camels, things like that. And they have the girls' dormitories look sort of like an old Western town, right? Like, it's an interesting, I mean, place. Like, you know, we all know that, like, in our circles that, like, people have interesting memories of summer camps and things like that. And that's sort of like what this functioned as. And I would be really curious to know what's underneath the ground there and what else that property is used for when there weren't gymnastics camps going on. And, you know, these are a few of my concerns. I have many more. The interview I did with Robert was really in depth, and we got into some, yeah, in some ways it's more eloquent. It's easier to be eloquent with it when you have somebody asking you questions about that. This is a hard topic for me to talk about because I love gymnastics and whatever, whatnot, but it's not that different than what goes on. I mean, it's a completely different thing because it's athletics and not entertainment, but the whole process of selection as a child and then sort of grooming and shaping and molding and creating, you know, just like they create a star, they create an athlete. And there's a lot that goes into that. And not all of it is wholesome.
And you can see how pedophiles would be attracted to gymnastics, mm-hmm, because the ideal body type for these young girls is to look like a young girl, albeit, yep, with all the strength, agility, flexibility, et cetera, which to me is astonishing, the kind of strength and, you know,
yeah,
optimism these little girls can manifest. Excuse me. And you make a very good point about Caroli, because we're familiar with what some of the East German, for example, and other Eastern Bloc, former Eastern Bloc Olympic teams did. You know, the mm-hmm. harsh communist ideology overlay. And then there was the strict regimen. You know, this is East versus West. This is us against the decadent West. So the athletes were put almost like on a war footing. And then they had no qualms about doping these athletes, you know, up to the gills. So, you know, they had no qualms if these people came down with cancer later on or whatever other maladies as a result. And another aspect I see, which, you know, I'm a big baseball fan. And so I see this in Little League where there's kind of indifference on the one hand and on the part of the parents, as well as this kind of vicariously living through their kids, right? Their unrealized dreams of being a baseball star or whatever. Because what I've seen in Little League is there's a lot of parents. All it takes is for a pet or to walk up, you know, at the start of Little League season. I want to be a coach. I got a van. I can drop the kids off, take them out to pizza after the ball games.
Yep.
Astonishing to me, Emily, just how many people say, take our kids away. You know, it's like, not my problem. We got someone else to watch over the kids. And so that's why pedos go where the kids are, whether it's band in high school, whether it's, you know, coaching. It's like they go where the kids are.
Well, the other, absolutely. And it's amazing to me how quickly parents will turn their kids over to someone. Now, gymnastics, and maybe a little bit more than baseball is, because in baseball, like with the Little League kind of stuff, like you're right, almost anybody can become a coach. Gymnastics is a little different than that. Like in the recreational aspect, it's still more selective than just than Little League for coaches and stuff like that. You had to have actually really been a gymnast and that kind of thing for the most part. But any kind of competitive gymnastics, one of my big issues, and actually one of the things that this provides a great opportunity for us to learn from, and if we can handle this situation correctly, then maybe it's like a model for how we can handle a bigger situation with our governments and stuff, is that gymnastics is completely based on authority, right? Like the kid, it's like a little bit militaristic, but like the parents hear that this coach is good, and if that coach shows any interest in their kid, then the parents just go, okay, here's my kid. Right? You know, it's like, just like, you know, in churches, the people all trust the pastor, right? Everyone's like, oh, this man is a wonderful pastor. And so there's like no other examination that needs to be done. People just believe that because their inner dogma is kind of entwined with that, right? Like religion, government, and then sports is such a big thing in this country, you know, in a lot of countries. It's almost like a religion here, right? And if somebody shows interest in your child and says they have talent, that's just like saying you're the chosen one, you're a special one, like, you know, you're God's anointed child or whatever, right? So you know, parents need to understand that, like, just because somebody is accomplished and someone else says they're important, that doesn't mean they're trustworthy. That means, you know what I mean, you need to my biggest problem with our world in general is the belief in authority. Like, I don't like declared authority or elected authority. I don't believe in that kind of authority. I like earned authority. And earned authority is if, you know, you meet some, so you, you know, you meet someone who is, you know, good at something or has these accolades or whatever, but over a period of time you get to know them and they, you know, you don't just trust them right away. Through their knowledge, passion, love, dedication for something, their expertise becomes obvious, but not just because they know a lot, because they're able to impart the information to you in a way that empowers you to use it in a way to help you become better. To me, that's how somebody earns any kind of authority in my eyes. And that's just not how it happens in gymnastics world. In gymnastics world, it's like there's Carolis and there's a few other famous coaches and whatever. And there's a doctor who people are like, oh, he's the national team doctor. So you're lucky if you get to see him. Well, now they feel lucky. So they're not going to question anything he's doing. Any special treatment he might be giving is probably part of why he's so good, right? People just all of a sudden like fall apart when some kind of authority figure shows interest in their kid. Authoritarianism of any kind is not healthy for human beings. You know what I mean? And I think we really need to start, if somebody's really good at something, that will become evident over time. You don't just have to believe it because they or someone else, even if it's 10 or 12 or 14 people say so. You know, like you read Yelp reviews, and everyone says this restaurant is wonderful. But if you go to the restaurant and it's terrible, you're not going to go back. Well, you need to do, the same thing needs to be happening with this. If you have a bad experience with someone, don't just, you know what crappy food tastes like. You're not going to be convinced the food tastes like crap. If it, you know, it tastes good if it tastes like crap. Same thing here. If you're seeing things, you need to be observant and watch. And if you're seeing things go on with coaches and whatever that you have questions about, you need to ask those questions. You need to not be threatened by their authority, you know?
Yeah, and the fact that this Nasser guy was an MD, which means that he's able to and legally allowed to prescribe a whole cocktail of drugs if he's fit for whatever reasons. Who's to say he's not prescribing hypnotics or sodium amytal or something like that?
And I do think that's happening. We didn't hear a lot of that in the testimonies, but you know, I do think it's entirely possible that people thought they were going to him for one service and they just have no memory of what else happened while they were there. Because I do struggle to believe that, I mean, it's hundreds of girls have come out so far. I think by the time it's all said and done in regards to just this one man, it's going to be thousands. Like, he was seemingly giving the same treatment to everybody, no matter what their injury was. And I have some further questions about that I may go into in the future sometime. But there was one story that I read of Michaela Maroney, who was a 2012 Olympic gold medalist. And she talked about traveling to an international competition and him giving her something for a muscle relaxer or some kind of sleeping pill or something on the airplane. And the next thing she remembers, she woke up in his hotel room.
Oh, wow.
So that's interesting. You know what I mean? But yeah, I also, you know, even if he wasn't drugging girls, like the reason that I bring up the question about whether he was some kind of handler or programmer is because, you know, if you know, he may have been doing further sexual things than we're aware of, and he may have been putting people in some kind of hypnotic trance or doing some kind of, you know, creating screen memories or mind wipe kind of techniques on them. I think that, you know, we have to consider these possibilities because of what we know about from other areas about how this happens. I just almost find it impossible to believe that for 20 or 30 years, he was just doing this exact same thing to practically every girl that came into his office, and that there was never anything more to it. You know what I mean? Obviously there was a few people who came forward that there was a neighbor who he sexually abused and it seemed to go a little farther, and there was a few other things, but for the most part, people are reporting the same thing, that he would go into the office, he would rub their hamstrings out, and then he would put his finger inside of them. There was a few girls, one girl that said anus, most of them were just saying vaginally, and would do kind of massage them from the inside while he was rubbing their hamstrings and whatever. I struggle to believe that that's really all that ever happened. If that is all that ever happened, I'm not trying to make a bigger, you know, I'm not trying to look for something where there's nothing there, but like, this is so gross and so perverse, and he was so brazen with this that like, I have to feel that not that he was, protected from out the outside, but also somehow was really masterful, not just at manipulation, but also at mind control in order to keep this under wraps for this long.
Yes, because we know that pedophiles and other assorted perps, they network with each other. Sometimes mm-hmm. they'll create an organization and begin to staff that organization with like-minded perps, or they infiltrate an organization and begin using their influence as an agent of influence, begin to bring other perps into the network, which then that organization interlinks with other networks in a wider network. And we've seen you. I didn't know he was at Michigan State. That's a college that's had a long history of CIA black ops involvement, going at least back as the Vietnam War. And who's to say, and I hope it didn't happen, but knowing how these perps operate, for example, in the scenario you just described, he had to have help bringing that girl to his hotel room. Somebody had to see that happen, right? And secondly, it's who's to say that in this drug state, these girls weren't used for blackmail purposes, where because they look like little kids, right? Set them up with a politician, set them up, you know, with a judge or something like that, film the thing. And, you know, we just don't know, but we know the potential exists for that.
You know, you just brought up something that actually just broke through a wall that I've, like, you know, because gymnastics is so personal to me, like, even though my eyes are wide open and I, you know, you know me, I think of weird stuff about everything.
Me too.
I have been a little bit more, maybe naive in this area. And Robert, when I was on his show, he did bring up, he asked me if I thought maybe there was some kind of sex ring or like Penn State kind of thing going on at MSU. And I said, well, my thought at the time and the way he asked it was like, no, I don't think there's a sex ring, but I obviously think there's something going on. But the way you just brought that up, obviously Michigan in general, the entire state of Michigan has a long history with mind control in multiple, in many, many, many ways. But yeah, Michigan State, the number of, there's been a bunch of people who are covering for him there. People, students have been reporting him there since the 90s, these issues, and it's been swept under the rug. Finally now, the athletic director and the president have resigned and stepped down, and a number of other people, but all of them are still really being guarded and kind of, say, you know, trying to cover, you know, it looks like there's a lot of asshattery and butt covering going on, you know what I mean? And my thoughts have been, okay, so let me address one other thing first. So what you just said about the drugging and sex, so I've been telling people who are in the gymnastics community to start looking into political pedophilia and whatever and sexual blackmail and homosexual blackmail. And I don't know how I didn't see it just the way you just saw it, but yes, it is entirely possible that he could have, exactly what you're just talking about, that these girls could have been used for, I mean, I'm not trying, I don't want to make something where there's nothing, but you just brought, I mean, like my head is actually almost pounding right now. I mean, is entirely, you know, he was, a lot of these girls, there was one testimony that we played on our show that'll come out in a couple of days that I just did with Randy and Jennifer Constantine. And I played a testimony from a girl named Cameron Moore who was talking about how he asked her if he could videotape what he was doing. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if it is entirely possible that he was, that Haim's not the only one present. I mean, you were even though like in one way I feel kind of silly right now because we know this is exactly what happens, but I hadn't thought about it that way for this. It's really so much more difficult to see the complexities of things when you're really close to it sometimes. But yeah, I mean, especially they're traveling internationally and we know that there's like a lot of human and sex trafficking around international competitions and sporting events and things like that. Bravo to you for just breaking through a wall for me because I hadn't really thought about it from that perspective. I mean,
Michigan State University was not only a CIA hotbed, but a lot of the security, the law enforcement, they trained cadres to go to Vietnam and train security forces there. So there was always this interlinkage between intelligence and law enforcement right there at Michigan State.
I wasn't aware. Like I know that there's a whole mind control matrix in Michigan, but I wasn't aware of what you're telling me about Michigan State. My suspicion, and I said this, I can't remember if I said it on our show, on Robert's show, if there is a mind control program, I think it's being run out of MSU, and then the link between MSU and USA Gymnastics is Larry Nassar. Right. And so, you know, there's always the link between these other organizations in the universities, for, you know, how, I mean, I can see, like, my mind is drawing diagrams right now of how this would happen. But
yes, because if you look at NASA from the standpoint of a Dr. Lois Jolin West.
Jolin West. Yeah.
You know, where he's got the credibility, the gravitas of being, remember folks, he's a government employee. He's the doctor of the U.S. Olympic team. And also you have the linkage with the powerful athletic departments of these universities. I mean, you look at
so much money.
So you never see these social justice warriors complaining about how black athletes in these athletic programs are basically indentured servitudes. They're not allowed to have a sandwich from a sports agent or something, but they make millions of dollars off these people's backs. Yeah. Social justice warriors got nothing to say about that. And then you look at the role that Nebraska, University of Nebraska played, squelching down the Franklin cover-up.
Franklin's. I mean, well, also you look at a lot of these mind control programs emanated out of Harvard, Stanford, UCLA, there was a college in Canada, in Toronto, that, you know, you and Cameron,
yeah,
I think.
McGill University.
Yeah, McGill, that's it. They stem from universities, and then because universities have all of these, there's medical programs and psychology programs and all these different things, people from outside of the university come there for certain kinds of expertise, and because they're experimenting with new techniques and new technologies and whatever. I almost feel like I'm going to throw up right now. Like this, I mean, I knew, and we talked about with Robert that, you know, I posed the question, is Larry Nassar an MKUltra doctor? You know what I mean? But I wasn't aware of all the details about MSU. I'm going to have to look further into that. Cause I mean, there's something going on. There's something really, really, really being covered up. And how is it that in that area, girls were reporting it to the university, reporting it to the police, reporting it, and nothing was being done? We all know that the police are not here to help us and whatever. But I mean, if what you're talking about is exactly as it is, and I have no reason to believe that it's not, but I will look into it, then there may just be a massive, massive, massive network. I mean, and even USA Gymnastics, it's a governing organization for all of gymnastics in the United States, but their headquarters are in Indianapolis, which is not that far, you know what I mean, from Michigan, Indiana, you know what I mean? It's fairly close. So the network and some of the other, how this story ever originally broke was the Indianapolis Star covered it, and there was a story in regards to a little bit about Nassar, but also some other coaches, including Marvin Sharp, who had coached some of the Olympic gymnasts and whatever, who had also been accused of pedophilia and ended up killing himself in jail. I have questions about that as well. You know what I mean? There could be just an entire web, particularly in that area of the country, you know, bigger than that, but certainly in that area. You know, like I knew when the Penn State thing happened, I remember I told my dad, I was like, you watch, this is going to happen in gymnastics too. And he's like, huh? I'm like, watch. It's going to happen. And here we are, you know? So.
Yeah. And for the listeners also, check out Michigan State's connection to the CIA law enforcement during the Vietnam War and its connections with the Phoenix program in Vietnam, which is basically an interrogation, assassination, psychological warfare operation on a grand scale. MSU was a big part of that. So thank you for sharing that. That's key information. And, you know, let's just put it out there energetically and with a great big heart hug that a lot of these girls, not just the ones that are going through this now, but decades in the past, you know.
There's many, it isn't just about this guy in this case. I suspect the number of gymnasts in the United States that have been abused in some way, tons, but sexually in some way by someone related to their gymnastics career is in the tens to hundreds of thousands. And I'm going to say this here, and I've said it in the other two shows I've done about this. I know that some of these topics, if gymnastics people hear this and they're wondering what we're talking about, this is hard to hear. But you know, before you make assumptions, please ask questions about why we would talk about it this way. And if there is any gymnast out there who hears this, who has any kind of similar experience or whatever, then I would love to hear from you. And if anybody knows anything about what James is talking about, this is a further situation with Michigan State University, please, I would love to hear about this as well. So,
yes, absolutely. If anyone has gone through this, a parent, a relative that knows that their daughter or niece or whatever has been involved in any kind of abuse, please let Emily know, because you know she's basically the authority in our field about this. So thank you for sharing that. And just changing gears for a second, and again, it goes back to the point I made earlier about how spirit, destiny, call it what you will, puts us in places even in spite of ourselves sometimes. Mm-hmm. You found yourself in the underground music scene, the music scene. I had on two occasions spoken with two different guys, young guys, you know, compared to me, but they were shakers and movers in the whole Southern California rave scene. One mm-hmm. of them was in San Diego, and he used to set up raves in, where was it, one of the Indian reservations, Pechanga, I can't remember where.
Yeah, in La Jolla area, right?
Which is a very Illuminati-saturated place, La Jolla. They got the big Emerald City Mormon temple there, and La Jolla is a financial district of San Diego. And also, I spoke to another young guy. They both had ET experiences. Mm-hmm. And the other guy was in the LA rave scene. And mm-hmm. they both told me independently, first the one kid in the early 90s, he said that his feeling was that ETs or some other non-human source played some role in influencing not only the music, but the vibe, the general atmosphere at these raves. And he mm-hmm. told me a story of how at this rave at an Indian reservation, Grays actually showed up. But everybody, you know, not everybody, but a lot of people were on you know, ecstasy and, you know, a lot of people were on, you know, drugs, basically. And then the yeah. other guy told me that in what he'd seen, he had the etheric third eye vision thing going mm-hmm. on. And he would be at these raves and he would see, like, just countless Grays, you know, interdimensionally moving in and out of people. He would see these big snake entities hovering over groups of people on the dance floor, and the big snake entity would just be absorbing the information, the loosh that was being mm-hmm. diluted by the dancers, and then, you know, it would be growing. He'd be watching this thing with his third eye vision, and so he saw it from a perspective like an interdimensional perspective, that we know that certain drugs open people up in different ways. And certain drugs also provide this excess energy, whatever you want to call it, which feed a lot of these lower dimensional entities. I was just wondering, from your standpoint, did you see anything like that, or did you make any kind of connections which told you that there might have been more to this scene than meets the eye?
So, yes. The easy answer is yes. So I don't know if you wanted to save some of this for the second hour for some of, like, the more personal experiences, but I will say,
let it rip, whatever you feel moved to talk about.
Well, whatever. Okay. Yeah. Whatever you want to do. So yeah. So 100% yes. I've been speaking, you know, for me, I've had a lot of interesting experiences with dance music. It can be extremely healing, extremely, empowering, extremely good for learning and getting things about yourself, depending on how you use your experience with the music. There is a reason that rhythmic repetitive music has been played in drum circles through indigenous cultures and stuff throughout history. And it is ripe for manipulation too. Like, they know, they understand that the amount of energy and the amount of inner vision and the amount of self-knowledge and connection with others that can be gained through these kinds of experiences is almost it's huge, right? And so of course there would be an agenda to try and manipulate that, control that, create a synthetic version of it, get people all lost and into some ridiculous, like, aspect of it or whatever. And that's absolutely been going on. I remember I've had unusual experiences with dance music since the very beginning. That was part of the appeal. I like weird stuff. You know what I mean? I remember in about 2010, 11, I was looking at the original articles that Dave McGowan posted on his Literal Canyon series on his website before he turned it into a book. And I remember thinking, there's something like this going on in the dance music scene. And at the time, and for many years, the rave scene was like a late 90s, early 2000s kind of thing for me. And then it moved into these underground warehouse parties that I still go to and I enjoy. And for the most part, it's a lot of nice people involved in it. And I'd say that 99.5% of them have no idea what's going on, right? And are not involved in the creation of any of these kinds of machinations. There's a very small percentage that I would say are either aware of it or are participating in the dark side of this, right? I was going to warehouse parties, and I was reading Dave McGowan, and this was during the period of time where I was, like, starting to recognize that there had been something funny going on with me, but, like, kind of in denial of it, and it was like a very strange time for me. And I remember thinking, oh, I have to talk to Dave McGowan one day. Like, one day I'm going to try and contact him. But, like, I was at such a messy point in my life. It wasn't going to be at that moment. And then, a couple of years later, fast forward a bit, Dave McGowan died and I never got to talk to him. And about the same time that Dave McGowan was ill, actually, I probably was when Dave McGowan was ill, I started hearing of this guy, Mark Devlin. Right. And he was talking about music stuff and whatever. And I'd heard a few interviews with him and I thought it was interesting. And then I heard him on Higher Side Chats talking about how, you know, he realized that after his first book, he was going to have to dig deeper, and he was going to do a second book, and he was really interested in looking into dance music and the mind control things going on in there. I thought, okay, this is my chance. Like, this is my chance to talk to somebody, because I never did it with Dave. And so it was just shortly after I had started doing the show with Randy, I contacted Mark for, you know, to have him on the show. And we chatted, and he just asked me to be on his show to share my dance music experiences. And it's been really, so I got to speak about it on his show, and I'll get into some of my experiences here. But it emboldened me to start speaking out more about it. And I'm very happy to get to contribute some things to his new book that just came out. And he and I are doing an event here in Los Angeles in a couple of weeks. I really, once I made that connection between the Dave McGowan thing and what was going on, I really started looking at things from a different perspective and recognized that a lot of things that I thought were my own personal experiences actually matched up to things that could be synthetic created experiences. And what people don't understand about, so people obviously know that, you know, at raves and parties, there's a lot of people taking ecstasy or, you know, acid or other kinds of drugs and things like that. And, you know, you can have positive experiences on drugs. Like, I've had tremendously healing experiences and eye-opening experiences, particularly on, you know, entheogens like mushrooms or whatever. But it also opens you up to a whole bunch of other stuff. It definitely thins your etheric body and allows things in. But also, and this is the part I think most people miss, the music, if anyone's familiar with cymatics, the music and the techno, electronic music is...
What does cymatics mean, if you just want to...
Cymatics is like, if you can go watch cymatics videos on YouTube, you can put like salt on a plate and then vibrate it.
Yes.
And it will vibrate into geometric shapes.
Geometric shapes, okay. Yeah.
Right? And so... the dance music, more than any other music, is solely based on vibration and frequency. There is not usually very many vocals, and it's not about melody so much. It's more just like different rhythms and beats and frequencies all layered on top of each other. So the cymatics you can create with electronic music are like very, very intricate compared to like other kinds of music in some ways, right? And that can be amazing. Like, you know, like the kind of inner visions you can have while doing psychedelics and dancing can really show you a lot about how the geometry of the universe works. But this is what I've come to know, and this goes right to your story that the guy shared with you. The interdimensionals are masters at sacred geometry. And this music can open up certain geometries the way a key opens a door. Right, so imagine like you vibrate a geometric shape into existence. There's entities that understand how to align themselves with that geometry and go through the same way a key goes through the hole in the door and can turn it. So your friend is absolutely right. The aliens are, I think of them more as entity, but people see entity in a lot of different ways, like the entities or even just like energetic abstraction kinds of things, right? People will perceive them in whatever way their mind is set up to perceive them. So some people will see alien kinds of creatures. Some will see demons if they come from a religious background. Others, if they're more spiritual, will see like a more indigenous kinds of character things, right? But it's an entity. It's an energy. It's a thought form. It's right. They are geometry, and they understand, you know, if you can create a certain kind of geometry, the entity that can align with that will definitely show up and come through. So aliens or interdimensionals, they love dance music because it's like a geometry feast for them. Right. One of the things that happened for me, like about, in like the mid 2000s, I started closing my eyes when I was dancing. Like, I had moved back to Los Angeles from Austin. Like, Austin, I had been very involved in the party scene, and I had a lot of friends. I was really social there, but here, not so much. Here, like, my experiences with music have been more solitary. Like, I'm in a room full of people, but I'm mostly having experiences with myself. And I started closing my eyes when I was dancing, which is amazing, like, in a lot of ways. And I started seeing, first it started with like fractals and mandalas and things like that. And then it became really, really complicated sacred geometry, and then started like almost like time travel, like perforating those geometric, almost like geometric grids would be set up. That, and then it was almost like if I could align my energy with them, I could kind of travel through them. And I would have experiences where I was like essentially remote viewing the pyramids being built in Egypt. Everyone else is at the party. They're drinking, dancing around.
Yeah, it's like else. What Carlos Castaneda says when, excuse me, his assemblage point has been moved, you know, and suddenly seeing into all these other dimensions and stuff.
I could it was interesting how I figured out, like, I think a lot of these places and times are actually just stacked on top of right now, and it's just whether you can kind of see them. And so I started having all these experiences, which were amazing, but like, and some of them, and I think a lot of them were really organic, but at a certain point I sometimes would have something come in, didn't seem like it was me, like something with the geometries would morph into some of these like snake or serpent like characters, or sometimes they would turn into faces that were like demonic entity looking kinds of faces, which is not something I think about. I was not a person really raised with religion. I do not fear the devil kind of stuff. And you know what I mean? It was almost like I was being seduced, and not in a romantic way, by some of this geometry, right? And I started to question whether some sort of art. At first I thought maybe it was some kind of like someone was running some kind of artificial intelligence program on like thing where they were like artificially sort of, which I think that's possible. I do think they have psychotronic. I think what's going on at underground parties is that they experiment with psychotronic weaponry, with vibrational weapons, with sound and light weapons. And also just, they do it at these smaller underground parties. They just kind of experiment and observe, and then they apply it at these big massive festivals where you can really entrain a larger group of people. And I started to recognize some of this. And I also actually, it's kind of funny. So one of the things that happened a little earlier on when I first, before it got really weird, when I first started seeing some of the geometry and getting some, like I would get information about the universe, like with some of this stuff. And I thought, okay, this is interesting. I want to start asking it questions, right? And so, because I would just get tremendous amounts of information coming at me without asking or whatever. Like I'd go home and like I had like a full lesson in like the metaphysics of the universe, right? So I decided to ask it a question, and I just was like, I remembered I started asking a series of simple questions, but no matter what question I asked, I always got the same answer. And the answer was, this is the sacred geometry of space, time, and sound. And I do think such a principle exists, but you and I both know that if a principle like that exists, then they're working it. And I started to wonder if this was like either some kind of entity or technology, and it wasn't used to being talked back to. And so all it did when I talked back to it was announce itself, right? It didn't have an answer. It would just kind of state what it was. I started researching. I looked into sacred geometry a lot. I was already into sacred geometry, but I looked into sacred geometry of space, the sacred geometry of time, sacred geometry of sound. I couldn't find anything about that. And I started to realize that how we're being controlled is through light and sound, and using the sacred geometry of space, time, and sound to essentially vibrate reality into existence. And that there's an organic process to that. But it's an organic, I think it's a, I mean, it's hard to say because at this point I'm to the point where I think we're living in a simulation. But I think at one time the simulation was more organic and biological than it is now. So, you know, when I say organic, I mean on a couple different levels. But if such a system exists, then you and I both know that a system exists to manipulate, control, and create based on those principles.
What's interesting also was when the one guy in San Diego, the raver, and he was, like I said, high up and in raving circles, he would organize the events, basically. He and I got talking, and it occurred to me that what if some of these raves, and you know some of the very large raves, because there could be thousands of people there, what if the site of these raves itself was like an energetic vortex there.
It is. And I suspected that for a long time. I've been to a lot of these parties on the Indian reservations, and they're different. But most of the parties I go to are in warehouses in downtown Los Angeles. And they absolutely are, because I've had some strange, like, we can get into some of these in the next hour if you like, also some more detailed experiences. But they're absolutely, some of these buildings that they like, there's a reason why all of these underground parties, you'd think that like more of them would get shut down. They want these things to happen. You have a party in a place that you want to do something energetically, and all the people will come. How do you get the people to go to this spot? You make a party there. Right. And it's an energetic, like literally this party that I went to not that long ago, I could tell that this was some kind of like type of like interdimensional gateway or hub or pass through station. Cause there was things blowing through the room all night where I swear to God, I felt like I was the only one seeing them, but it was just like certain kinds of energies and the way people were behaving. Yeah. I think that they're, you know, I don't know if it has to do with ley lines or vortexes or whatever it is, but if you go there and then create the kind of vibrations with the music. And also there's a huge usage of laser and LED lights, which LED lights are huge for mind control, but they're also, the LED lights are something that is almost interdimensional, like things outside of our visual spectrum can pick up on that in a different, you know, in a different kind of way. So you create, you basically open a gate, and then every, you know, all, it's like an intergalactic disco. Everybody can come. Right. And it's an opportunity, just like it's an opportunity for intelligence agencies to mingle with partiers and use psychotronic weaponry and pass around certain kinds of drugs and see what would happen. It's also a chance for the interdimensionals to come and party with the humans. And we know that like a lot of these, in, a lot of these kinds of energies are wish they were humans, wish they were embodied, wish they were. And it's an opportunity because the people are so open to sort of experience that. And also the amount of energy, the reason that raves were originally called raves was because it's like you bring together the sound and visuals and music, and everybody had their own style back then. And all this energy comes together to create like a one-time energy signature, like a souvenir, an energy souvenir on the universe. And the amount of louche, it's like a, it's like being a connoisseur of like a caviar or a certain kind of wine or vodka, right? Like, ooh, this energy from this party tasted this way, and this energy from this party tasted this way. You know what I mean? It's almost like creating, and I go to a lot of different kinds of parties that create a completely different kind of energy and atmosphere, and bring a whole, you know, different kind of vibe with them than other parties. And yeah, you have to, you know, suspect that there are entities and energies out there waiting that enjoy that kind of thing. You know, and a lot of people have seen some of them. You know, I've seen things at parties that are interesting that I haven't seen elsewhere. So yeah, it creates like a, it's a portal. Parties are portals.
And another thing that was pointed out to me by the guy in LA, he said that his observation of people who use ecstasy long-term is a lot of them develop, for whatever reason, lower back problems. And
yeah,
we know that in our studies of you know, these entities, that that's one of their inroads. Someone who's got mm-hmm. chronic back pain, you know, yep. they just like glom onto that. And also when you talk about how intelligence and black ops could latch on to that kind of a music scene, we already have a model with that, as you know, Ken Kesey, The Acid Test, The Grateful mm-hmm. Dead, Timothy Leary, Owsley, the big time LSD manufacturer in San Francisco, who was never busted as far as I know. And then parallel to that, you had Sidney Gottlieb in the CIA going around dosing all these people at conferences and whatnot. So, you know,
it's the same thing.
It's
the same thing. It's exactly the same thing. And it is, you just said something and then I just completely lost my train of thought. Something you said made me think, maybe it'll come back. But no, it's the same. I was going to say, so actually in my experience, all drugs cause lower back problems. Mm. And so that's where, and I would agree that, you know, like people go to parties aren't as, you know, obviously people know about ecstasy and acid and mushrooms and stuff. People are using ketamine, methamphetamine. There's all sorts of things. And, you know, I don't have a problem with that. People should be able to do whatever they want with their own body. But most people who are doing these things have no idea about the things you and I are talking about. They have no idea. You know, just the way your body vibrates differently when you're on a drug opens up the same kind of geometry on the inside of your body that the music can open up. You know, like, your body is mostly water. So if you're at a party and you're being vibrated, so you're like a plate of cymatics, right?
Yes.
And then you have, you know, the drugs open up their own geometries in your body that attract, I think some of the things, some of the energies or entities that may come just from music. There's some music that is completely discordant, and I think though, and completely like sounds like grinding and raking and awful, and I think that attracts some icky characters. But some music, I think, you know, if there's awful entities out there, there also have to be entities that are more benevolent. I wouldn't say necessarily good. I don't think there's helpers or any of that kind of crap that a lot of people think. But I think there's somewhat benevolent or ambivalent energies, and you know, whatever. So I think music can open stuff up for them, but I think the combination of some of this music and then the drug tends to really attract or act like a magnet for, you know, it's like when someone, if you're trying to get into something, you're looking for a hole, right? And the drug creates the hole in the ether. It creates, you know, it's like anything, just like sugar creates cavities in your teeth. Like that's kind of like what drugs, or even sugar, because I consider that a drug, acts like to the body. And it creates holes for things to, you know, come in that shouldn't be there.
Yeah, and another thought before we end the segment, the guy in San Diego who used to set up the raves and Indian reservations, he told me that in his considered opinion, having had ET and interdimensional experiences himself, he felt that these entities played some role in influencing how the music came about.
Yeah.
Influence the music makers.
I agree. You know, so you watch over time, like particularly, so I'm mostly interested in dance music. So you watch DJs, their sound evolve over time. And that's normal in an artist's career that their sound will evolve over time. But sometimes you watch somebody who is like really good, who's maybe like on the verge of breaking through. And then all of a sudden, something happens, their sound changes, they break through, and then they're a huge star, and their music is never the same as in any way as it was before. And something has taken over this person. Just, you know, the same thing is going on in dance music that goes on in the rest of the music industry. But yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that dance music, that tech electronic music is, whether it was the intention or whether it just happens this way, and I think there's some of both, it is part of the transformation into transhumanism. It is part of the merging of humans and technology. I see some of these guys, some of these producers, DJs, and live PAs who are so good and so proficient at using this technology to make music that it's almost as if they're operating a part of their body. It's a symbiotic relationship. It's almost, they're using the electronics and the electronics is using them. Like it's, they're a vessel for some, kind of otherworldly sounds and intelligence to come through. And that doesn't necessarily mean bad, but we have to be aware of it. Like, just like anything else, there's bad humans, there's good humans. There's bad music, there's good music. The same with this, right? But most people just are wide open to accepting whatever comes as what is exactly what it is. And like, I've kind of occasionally taken little polls at parties. I've never met anybody at a party who knows what transhumanism is, even mm-hmm. though they're participating. Some of the parties I go to are absolute celebrations. We can get into some of this in the second hour for sure. Are absolute celebrations of transhumanism, but nobody there even knows what it is.
Wow. Well, we've reached the end of the first segment with our guest, Emily Moyer. Emily, would you like to tell our listeners how they can get a hold of you and what your website is?
Sure. So you can find us at I do the show with Randy Moggins, Off Planet Radio, offplanetradio.com. We're also on Patreon now. We have some special segments and bonuses and different kinds of things for people who support us there. And that's patreon.com/offplanetmedia. And people want to communicate, I'm pretty easy to find on Facebook, and I'm always open to respectful and intellectual dialogue. And I also am, I've been working a lot on, we're going to talk about maybe some of the sugar as programmable matter in the second hour.
Yeah, definitely.
Working a lot on trying to help people in our community regain their health as a way of working through their trauma. And I'm available for holistic wellness and conscious lifestyle consultations. And you can contact me if you're interested in those. And our YouTube channel is Off Planet Media.
To all our dear listeners out there, if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.